swords.
It's surely illegal.
Dads with swords. Dads with swords.
It just shouldn't happen.
Dads with swords.
Welcome back to Dads with Swords. We're here again, all three of us, Brian, Brandt, and Krista.
Hi.
Hello.
And today we've got an interesting topic. I wouldn't say our most loaded topic, but certainly the one that has the most potential to branch outside of WMA, to bridge the gaps between fighting and fatherhood and general real life, because today we're going to talk a little bit about fear.
The fear?
Just fear. Not the fear, not a specific fear, but fear in general. That visceral human experience thing. That feeling in the pit of your stomach when something awful is coming up and you just know it.
Like palms sweaty.
Fear.
Mom spaghetti.
Just like that.
Okay.
See, I think, fear is definitely the overarching term, but I think a lot of it kind of applies to, like, anxiety, I guess. Mm-hmm. Whether it's performance anxiety.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, anxiety, I don't know the etymology. Maybe this is research I should have done beforehand. But, anxiety and fear are definitely related. I mean, that's really what being anxious is just being fearful all the time, often of dumb things.
I was gonna say, I think anxiety is essentially fear of the unknown.
Which, yeah.
That applies to a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly applies to WMA. I've been diagnosed with anxiety in the past. I've talked about it a little bit before on the podcast when I brought up the HEMA mental health group. And again, great if you're into HEMA and any of these discussions about mental health, you know, set off alarm bells for you, jump on that group and get yourself some support. But anxiety for me has always manifested in HEMA, in the SEA, in WMA in general as performance anxiety, or what I call tourney choke. It used to be my old, you know, standby in the SCA that I'd go to practice and I'd fight really well in practice and I'd be doing great and I'd be, you know, feeling good about how well I could fight, and then I'd go to a tournament and get the floor mopped with me in the first round by people who I had maybe just fought in practice 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
But something had changed and I get tense and I choke. That's why I used to always call it tourney choke, because that was what it was. I choked when I went to a tourney.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty common in sports psychology, I guess. They call it, one of the first things was at golf, they called it the yips. I have no idea why they called it the yips, but
yips.
It was the yips.
The yips.
And it would just refer to somebody who, you know, would, first couple days, they would shoot like an immaculate round of golf, and then when it came time to Sunday, they just, something didn't work. They'd, you know, shank one into the woods, and then they could never recover, or all of a sudden their swing would just go. I think that's what it mainly referred to as. You'd have a golfer who, you know, was golfing for years and years and years, and all of a sudden his swing would just go. Something was off.
Right.
Couldn't do it. He couldn't adjust, whether he tried to tweak it and then it just never came back or something, but it's almost like he lost the lightning out of the bottle.
Yeah. So for me, that particular brand of, you know, the yips, this performance anxiety, is something that's plagued me outside of WMA as well, just in my day-to-day life. And as a result of it extending to my daily life, as a result of it plaguing me my entire WMA career, is I've been really introspective about it. I've spent a lot of time trying to really figure out what's at the heart of it. And I realized that, you know, that's where I made that realization that this is the anxiety. This is the same performance anxiety that, you know, I dealt with other therapy for. It's that I'm always afraid in that tournament moment of, well, now there's people watching me. It's not just a practice. I'm not just worried about me and my opponent, or, you know, just worried about listening to, you know, whoever is teaching a little lesson. Now there's a crowd and they're all watching me, and some of them are better fighters than I am. You know, some of them are the elite level fighters in the SCA who are not competing today for whatever reason, and they're watching me. So I better not do anything stupid.
Right.
And then in my effort to not do anything stupid, sometimes I just don't do anything at all. And I think that's probably the most common trend for me, is that when I get that choke really strong, I shut down.
So it's not like you make a mistake necessarily.
No.
It's just that you just don't there's just inaction.
Just complete inaction. Like, it'll take me so long to make up my mind about what I want to do that by the time I start throwing the blow, I've already dropped my shield and been hit in the head.
Right.
Because I took too long to think about what I was going to do instead of just, you know, when I'm in practice, I'm just there and I'm just having fun fighting. And, you know, I blocked that shot because I didn't even think about blocking it. I just did it. But now I'm thinking about it instead of doing it.
Yeah.
Do you remember your first time, like, acknowledging your anxiety with fighting?
Like, the first time acknowledging that it was actually anxiety?
Yes.
Probably wasn't until, like, post-military or mid-military when I was actually getting therapy and was actually diagnosed with anxiety and started to sort of trace things back and realize, oh, those are kind of the same feelings I was having at that tournament where I just couldn't perform, couldn't do what I was supposed to do.
For me, when I have those moments of anxiety, it's almost like you're being yanked out of your body by your neck. And you have to just look at yourself failing. And there's nothing you can do about it. Just, you're hanging upside yourself, legs dangling, kicking yourself in the back of the head.
Yeah.
For me, also, I tend to lose visual focus. Like, my eyes just automatically drop down.
Right.
And it's almost like you have to, like, to submit to whatever it is that's giving you anxiety.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's an interesting way to look at it. I don't know that I've ever felt that sort of submission lowering the eyes thing. But I know certainly when I get into that state fighting, I'll focus on the wrong thing a lot of the time. Like, maybe I'll lock eyes with my opponent and I can't look away. Or I'll lock onto their weapon and I can't look at anything but their weapon and where it's moving. And that's a big thing that happens in martial arts in general. WMA just isn't the exception. Is that if you start to focus on one aspect of a fight, one aspect of your opponent, you're going to miss it all.
Mm.
If you're looking at their eyes and they decide to look at your leg and strike for your head, you just got played.
Yeah, I kind of find myself, especially when we're training, I kind of look forward and it's almost like kind of trying to get the wide view. Like, you're really using peripheral vision.
Absolutely.
Like, especially in doing training and stuff, you try not to look at specific things. You're just kind of looking forward and then, you know, halfway through the drills and stuff, you go, should I be looking?
Right.
It's weird. I don't find that I'm like, I have that paralysis because of anxiety, but I do find myself getting in my head a lot.
Right.
You find yourself trying to find the decision tree.
Yeah.
And I think that, I guess it would be a sort of a performance anxiety, but it's nothing, I'm not fear of the unknown, it's fear of, should I be doing that? Should I be doing the right thing? Is that the right thing?
Are you taking the right step in the right direction, or are you going to have to double back and start over?
That's definitely a huge aspect of martial arts is like, and it's, I would say martial arts in general is conquering fear. And I welcome any martial artist to any martial artist at all who disagrees with me to talk to me about that. I'd like to have a discussion with someone who doesn't agree. But for me, martial arts has always been the practice of conquering your own fear in a bunch of different ways. Because a huge facet of martial arts is committing.
Yeah.
Not just committing to practicing martial arts. That's definitely part of it. That's an exercise in commitment, I guess. But committing to an action in the midst of combat. And to not, you have to almost shut off that part of your brain that asks, is this the right thing to do? Is this not the right thing to do? And just commit to doing it. And the best thing about being a 21st century swordsman is that when I fuck up, nobody kills me. I get smacked. Sometimes there's a welt or a bruise.
Yeah.
One time a really gross bruise that broke open and bled, but I'll tell that full story later. But I'm not dead. I'm still here, and I get to then look back and analyze the mistake and fix the decision tree. But at the end of the day, it's still in the moment. Adrenaline's high. Fear is there, and you just have to act.
Yeah.
Every athlete probably goes through that.
Probably.
Every time they step out onto the field or whatever arena or like the pool, tennis court, you know, you're on the spot. You were trained to do one thing. And in sports, there is a loser.
Yep.
There has to be. And sometimes, and a lot of the times, it's going to be you.
Yeah.
And it's going to be you during a time when your friends and family are watching after you've been like pumping up this event. And then you're going to lose. And then you have that feeling of like, well, this was a waste of everyone's time. But that's again, like, that's getting right into your head.
Yeah.
You're right in the core of it. When the reality is your friends and family are just, you know, they're happy to see you just get hit with sticks. It's awesome for them.
But even without the fear, or even without the audience aspect, the fear of losing is very real as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Especially, nobody likes to lose.
Yeah, and I mean, despite our best efforts, we're all tied to our ego, and you know, if you lose, that's a big hit.
And like Krista said, lots of times, whether you're pumping your family up or just pumping yourself up, you get super amped up about, I'm going to go and I'm going to fight in this tournament. I'm going to beat this guy. I'm going to beat this guy. It's going to be awesome. And if you get your clock cleaned in the first round, it sucks.
Yeah.
It crushes your soul. And if you're like me, sometimes you then get so lost in your own fear and in your own anxiety that you stop being excited. And you start to just dread going to a tournament because, oh, I know I'm going to lose.
Yep, you got
to
eat those.
I'm just going to lose, so I don't tell anyone to get excited because I'm just, you know.
You got
to
eat all of those words like a big, dirty sandwich. Yeah. So it becomes hard to just be excited about something.
Yeah.
I think it, like, falls under, like, rejection and how
sure.
we all deal with rejection. And we're told to, like, take rejection and learn from it and grow from it. Well, you know what? No. Well, I mean, yes, but in the moment, no. It feels awful to be rejected. And, you know, you read all these things of, like, you know, you're rejected for reasons, and there's always the light at the end of the tunnel, and don't give up hope, and don't beat yourself up. But, like, all of that stuff is kind of annoying to hear when you're in the middle of those feelings of, like, well, it's, you know, it's okay that you feel this way, but don't feel this way because you're just wasting your time. You know what? Feel that way.
So here's good news, though. And this is good news for you because you're doing stick fighting. And we're going to go on Thursday. Both of us, we're going to stick fight. Martial arts is therapy for failure and therapy for rejection. That's something that I've really realized coming into the HEMA world. I still got a whole bunch of shit that I have to deal with. And a lot of it's left over from the SCA. And I loved fighting in the SCA enough that I'm going to get back into armor and do it again someday. Yeah. It's a gas. It's a lot of fun. But 99% of SCA practices, 100% of the practices that I have personally been to, it's not like a martial arts class. You go to an SCA practice, you put armor on. If you're brand new, there's probably somebody teaching you the basics. But once you've been there a couple of weeks, it's just get armor on and fight. Fight a whole bunch of people, and then we'll talk about the things you messed up, and you'll fight a whole bunch of people. There's not as much of a structure and teaching.
It's just like sparring days.
Yeah. So what I'm liking about HEMA generally being taught more as a martial art, a slightly more traditional take on it, where there's a class, there's some structure, is that you're rewarded for failing every day because you're rewarded by getting a tiny, tiny bit better. And that tiny bit better is almost impossible to gauge when you're just fighting people every day. And you're losing over and over again, getting hit in the head over and over again, it's really hard for you to step back out of yourself and go, yeah, well, I may have lost, but I was, you know, a fraction of an inch closer to blocking that time. You don't notice those incremental successes.
Yeah.
Whereas in a class, especially with a good teacher who's pointing out your failures and pointing out when you correct them, every day you can feel like, hey, I accomplished something. I got a little bit better at that. Yeah, Max didn't tell me that I was doing that parry wrong anymore. So there's lots of benefit to me to doing something in a more formal martial arts respect, especially with a good teacher, because you do have someone who is there to coach you, and ultimately their job is to make you not feel like a failure, even though you just spent an hour and a half or 2 hours failing.
Yeah, failing is a big part of, I mean, day-to-day life,
yep,
as well as being an athlete. Mm-hmm. Of any kind, like martial arts, you know, regular people.
Yeah,
sports.
We don't care about that.
Yeah, whatever.
Like, you've seen my pictures on Facebook. I'm not a traditional athlete by any
Keep
means.
Keep your stick balls and your balls to your balls.
good word talking, dear.
Yeah, good word talking. But yeah, dealing with that fear of rejection and the feeling that you know is coming. Like, I think a lot of people go out of their way to try to avoid it.
Yeah.
But you end up just doubling back to it.
So let's talk about different fears that happen in martial arts. Krista, you're pretty new to martial arts in general. Stick fighting is probably the first time that you've really come to a martial arts class in your life?
In my life, yeah. I mean, I've been to your classes at the park.
But you never took one, though.
No.
So this is like the first martial arts class you've actually taken. What, if any, things are you afraid of in that class? Just general blanket fears.
I'm afraid of getting hit.
Okay, that's a huge one.
I'm afraid of looking stupid.
Yep. That I think we covered. I mean, that's a lot of that performance anxiety. It's not just failing, it's looking dumb.
Yeah, I mean, there's... I'm afraid of looking dumb because I fear that my body is too old and doesn't know how to learn to move different.
Right.
So I'm always thinking, like, when Max will show me a, you know, it took me forever to figure out how to twirl the stick and I still can't do it.
Right, doing the moulinet.
The moulinet. Yeah. I can't do it. I feel stupid when I'm punching.
Right, when we do the pugilism stuff.
Yeah, when we do pugilism, I feel like I look like an idiot.
Yeah, just so everyone knows, Max teaches a pretty comprehensive class. We do Irish stick fighting, but he also teaches pugilism and Victorian self-defense, yeah. So we get well-rounded education there.
I also have that fear of, like, dragging the class behind because everyone's more advanced than
right.
me. And so Max has to take me aside and, like, bless his heart, he's super patient. And if he's frustrated with me, he'll never tell me or let me even know about
See that,
it.
And that's the mark of
awesome.
A good teacher, right? Robert's the same way. I mean, no matter how many times you screw something up, you never see Robert facepalm and go,
yeah,
oh.
Yeah.
He just calmly pulls you aside and explains, you know,
yeah.
how to you do
You never
it
see that, like, that swift moment of, like, ah, this person. So that's one of my fears. Also, just getting hit is really scary because... My body yeah. is like, no, you gotta avoid that physically. Well, drop the stick and get the hell out of here.
I was gonna say,
idiot.
we could probably go on, we could expound on just the fear of getting hit. Because
yeah.
it takes
huge.
A while to get rid of.
Yeah.
Like you
That's
still,
primal.
We train with masks on, and yet every time we flinch.
Yeah.
You can't help it.
I mean, yeah. you have to consider that not just for your entire life, but for the entire history of human beings on the planet Earth, getting hit is a bad thing.
It means you
die. Yeah, getting hit, especially with something sharp, it means you die, it means you get hurt, it means you get knocked out and don't get food. Like, all kinds of bad things yeah. come from getting hit. And that's, I think, the first of the many ways that martial arts forces you to confront instinct and go, nah, not today. I'm going to do something different than what my body is screaming at me to do.
Well, you're, like, shown how not to get hit in your blocks.
Yeah.
Guards.
But the problem is that those guards aren't...
They don't always work.
It's not that they don't always work. I mean, if you do them correctly, if you apply the correct parry to the correct blow with the correct timing, it will work. 100% of the time, you will always be able to parry that blow. The problem is teaching your brain that that's true.
Right.
And, like, teaching your lizard brain that that's true, because you can talk about that. We could talk about that for 3 hours here, that, you know, when you block like this, you stop the sword from hitting you here. And you got it in your head, and that makes sense. But if I go and swing a sword at you, I promise you, your sword's not going there to block it. You're going to, you know, cringe or flinch or try to put your hands up in front of your face. You have to train it over and over and over and over to overcome that fear.
I was going to say, you have to overcome literally thousands of years of, you know, genetic knowledge that...
Yeah.
what this would normally kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That
just
it's
don't
not,
do it.
It's not going to kill you this one time and then maybe the times after that. But, like, there's also that part of your brain is like, this one time though, it could.
Right. So maybe we'll circle back to that towards the end. But I don't know. Maybe there's something to be said about trust opposing fear. Because that's another huge part of martial arts, is really learning to trust other people, especially martial arts with swords. To trust them to do the right thing, to trust them to respond correctly to you. But anyway, well, I think we can circle back to that because we still got some exploration of fear to do. Now, as Brant said, it's pretty universal. If you've never been to a martial arts class, never been to a HEMA class, you show up for the first time, whether or not it's the, like, ah, fear or just that instinctive flinchy reaction, you're going to be afraid of getting hit. If not, something's different about you than a normal person. If you're totally willing to just stand there and be a living pal and not flinch and love it. I mean, maybe it's simple masochism. Maybe there's something else going on.
Maybe,
but
maybe you're just Russian.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. That's a whole other kettle of fish. I think a flip side of that fear is the fear to hit someone else.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And that's pretty real. I mean, there's been plenty of studies of people in combat, what percentage of soldiers in the Vietnam War were actually willing to shoot at another human being, and which percentage would instead just shoot off in the distance in the rough direction of the enemy. And when you've got a sword in your hand, there's no intervening distance, there's no way to aim slightly off, there's no way to even, you know, to shoot someone and convince yourself that it wasn't you that shot that person. You're right there, you're swinging that sword, you're hitting another person, and even blunt swords, even with equipment, there's a certain degree that I don't know, it's hard to hurt somebody that's, you know, they were your friend 5 minutes ago, and now they're your opponent. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way to misplace that responsibility of causing harm to someone. Everybody saw it. The stick didn't magically swing in the air on its own.
Yeah.
Well, I've had it where it becomes a compliment of, oh, you have really great control. That's right. Really great control. And then that slowly becomes, okay, you gotta hit him. You actually have to hit him.
Right.
And then that becomes, okay, find your measure, hit him in the damn head.
Yeah.
Hit him in the goddamn head.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're coming from not that long ago, we were little children.
Yeah.
In the playground being told, don't hit your friend.
That's right.
Stop hitting each other with those sticks. You know, it hasn't been that long since I've heard that, and now you're telling me it's okay?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Now that goes right into saying why, like, that's why control is so important in martial arts. And again, especially in HEMA, especially when a sword or a weapon's involved, because the amount of mechanical advantage there, even without a sharpened blade, it's still a whole lot of force if you misplace it and hit in the wrong spot. So I know that's true of Ironwood, that we absolutely preach control at all times. Making sure that you don't hit too hard, you hit with the exact adequate force that you need to acknowledge the blow, to cut if it were a sharp sword, but without causing permanent injury. But as Brant said, it's a fine line between, am I in control or am I afraid? Because you can't be both.
Yeah.
You can't be afraid and in control. You have to be able to put fear away. And sometimes, and this is true for me, even after years of hitting people with sticks and not getting in trouble for it, there's still that little bit of me that's like, if I hit this guy, I'm going to be in trouble. So am I really controlling myself, or am I just reacting to my fear of being in trouble or my fear of hurting someone? And it's hard to judge sometimes.
It's hard. Also, like, that's you getting back into your head.
Yep.
Crawling back into your head.
Right up in there.
Hiding in there and looking at all these question marks, and, you know, while you're doing that, you're getting hit in the head with a stick.
I guess the solution is just, we should all just be a little bit more dickish.
Yeah, I mean, there's almost an argument there that, you know, people who,
when it comes to training, just say, okay, you know what, the you know, classic trope, no more Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah,
well, here's,
but again, you run that risk of, am I actually in control?
Right.
Or am I just turning fear into, you know, a different kind of fear? Because that's something that we can discuss while we're on this topic. Fear doesn't stay fear.
No. Well, here's another side of fear. Have you ever been afraid that someone was going to hurt you?
Well, we covered that.
I mean, an incident where you were in a fight and you felt like that person was losing their control and going after you.
I would say never in a sparring session. That hasn't happened to me in sparring yet. And I think that speaks volumes to how Robert's control over the class goes well. I mean, sometimes we get frustrated that we don't spar as much as, you know, other schools might, but the extreme benefit of that is that nobody in the school spars until they're ready to act under control. However, sometimes in warm-up games where things get a little competitive, I've actually been injured in the process of one of those, and there was a student who used to attend Ironwood and doesn't anymore, who I honestly felt afraid to train with. And I'm personally not displeased that that person stopped training altogether, because it seemed like he had a really hard time managing that level of control. And it, for me, it was like, it's a matter of time before I get injured. And again, this leads me, second segue, right back into fear not staying fear. It's the old, you know, line from Star Wars that anger comes from fear.
I was going to ask you, about anger, because I've went through some counseling, and that was one of the big things, is anger is healthy. Everybody should definitely feel anger at some points in their life. I find it very hard to ever have my ire raised to the point where I'm angry.
Right.
I could be frustrated, sure, but anger is very hard to come by when it comes to me.
Right.
And so, do you ever feel angry in, say, you know, even if it's sparring about?
I've never felt angry sparring, and I think that's one of the reasons why WMA has drawn me in so much, is because it's that rare, especially rare in my young life when I was in the SCA, I was an angry youth. It took me a long time to get control of my anger, but when I was in the SCA, when I was armored up, when I was fighting, I was never angry. I was just too involved in what I was doing to bother being mad.
Just took you out of it more.
It took me right out of it, but I know from my own introspection that a lot of times my anger is based in fear anyway. You know, you get so afraid that you're going to screw something up, and then you're mad at yourself because you feel like you've already screwed it up, and you're all in your head, no, I'm such an idiot, and it's pretty easy once that anger's there to just go, this doesn't feel good being piled on me, I'm going to pile it over on you instead and be angry at you instead. And I think that's a constant possibility.
You're going to administer that anger blow by blow.
yeah. And it's always there. I don't know. Maybe I should recant my previous statement and say that it's not that I've never felt angry in sparring. It's that thankfully I've gotten to the point of martial arts training that once I feel the anger, I just walk out. I've never continued to fight someone and been angry. I've gotten into the midst of a fight and gotten angry and just said, you know what? It's not worth winning the fight anymore. It's not worth winning the fight and walk away. But I think it would be definitely possible to push that beyond. And if you were actually afraid, I mean, if I was actually thought that person was going to injure me, like you had said, if I was really afraid of the person, it'd be pretty easy to turn that fear into just sheer anger out of self-defense and do something regrettable.
Do you think people use anger in WMA as kind of like a tool if they ever lose a fight and they just get pissy and like, oh, you cheated, or
oh yeah,
you hurt me and you did something illegal, and they're mad.
Anger is like that number one coping term for that kind of stuff.
And everything.
Yeah, and everything. And it's not, I can't even say a bad thing about a person who's had that kind of an angry reaction, because it happens. Like, your emotions are high. Again, you've had that fear. You've been working with that fear all day. Whether you got it under control or not, you were probably a little bit afraid of going into this tournament and losing. And then all of a sudden your fear comes true, especially if it was in, like, the final round. And in your head you think that I shouldn't have lost, that I should have won because this and this and this. Man, is that easy to turn angry real fast.
And then it turns into, like a whole situation involving other people.
Now, involving other people, there's a really broad spectrum of fear that happens in the WMA world. But I would say the first time that I ever experienced this particular brand of fear was when I was in the military getting out of the military. So I, just for background, I did what's called a voluntary initial engagement here in Canada. I signed on for 4 years in the military. And at the end of that 4 years, I said, okay, I'm done my 4 years, and I left. So I didn't quit. I just chose not to sign a new contract. I chose that my 4 year service was all that I wanted to do. But there were a lot of people, some people who I still consider really close friends, who shit on us nonstop about our decision to leave the military. And they would caution us on how awful the civilian world is, how we were going to be poor, destitute, just these terrible things that you'd never wish on your enemies. And yet here are these people, our friends, telling us that this was going to happen to us and trying to make us afraid. And it finally clued into me that they're trying to transfer their fear onto us. Because the only people who were telling us these things, they were never people who were happy in the military.
That's true.
It was always people who were miserable there, who wanted to not be in the military, but they were so afraid of all the things they were warning us about that they stayed in a situation they hated and called us the idiots for leaving because that's what they needed to justify their own position. And I find that a lot in Western martial arts too. That, you know, as an example, I left the SCA and went on to do HEMA. It doesn't mean that I left the SCA behind forever.
Yeah.
I just went off to do another thing. But there were definitely people who, like, well, you're an idiot joining those groups, and why would you do that? And the SCA is better. And again, it becomes this fear of they're afraid that I'm learning something that they're not, and they're going to miss out. Is that FOMO, fear of missing out?
Yeah.
And it impacts our community in a pretty significant way, because anywhere you go in the WMA community, you're going to have HEMAists telling you that Skadians, that's a funny word for people in the SCA, are idiots, they're nerds, they're not real fighting, blah, blah, blah. You'll have Skadians saying the same thing about LARPers. You'll have, you know, HEMAists talking about Eastern martial artists and just blah, 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 and back and forth. Everybody's wrong in order for me to be right. And no one ever seems to examine the possibility that maybe we're all a little wrong, and maybe we're all a little right.
We're just our own unique brand.
Yeah.
Now, if this type of fear is seemingly very familiar to you, that's because it appears everywhere in our day-to-day lives.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not you choose, like, chocolate over vanilla, or you go to one school over another school, or live in a different town, you know, it's, well, this town is better because we have blank, blank, and blank, and what are you doing? What it is, it's you're projecting your fear of the commitment you made.
Yeah.
and questioning, instead of questioning your commitment, you judge another commitment because fear kind of blocks introspection.
It's the path to the dark side, folks. That's all you got to remember.
It's awful. And introspection and fear, you know, they belong together. Like, when you have a fear, you do need to look inside yourself and ask the serious questions that may take some time, like, why do I feel this way? Yep. Is there anything I can do to remove myself from this fear? You know, are these choices that I'm making good for me?
Yep.
And that is applied to literally everything in your life. Sports, work, family, friends, your own alone time.
Yeah.
You know, it's all fear-based. And if you can't look inside yourself, you have to look outward. So, and that's where that projection comes from.
In my own
I'm not a doctor, but I'm saying I know what I'm talking about.
In my own introspection, and maybe I'm wrong here, again, I'm totally up for any kind of debate on this as long as it stays friendly because I'm afraid of too much conflict. Haha. But I think that kind of fear, that fear that turns into you're an idiot for studying HEMA, or even you're an idiot for studying Lichtenauer over Fiore or whatever the case may be, it all comes down to this really real, really real fear where we all know that we're mortal. We have a limited amount of time on the planet. In the society we live in, we have an even more limited amount of time in which to engage in things we truly love. You know, a lot of us are stuck in jobs we don't like, you know, going through the daily grind. You've maybe got a couple hours in a day that you can actually squeeze out for a hobby. And there's a terror that you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Throw right? some babies in there, too.
Yeah, yeah.
In that but, cocktail of bullshit.
But to the point, you're afraid that you're doing the wrong thing, right?
Every day.
Like, if I'm studying Lichtenauer, as I am right now, and it turns out that Fiore is better, oh my god, I've wasted all this time, and I'm an idiot, and I can't deal with that fear, so I better just really, really, really focus on shitting on people who do Fiore to make sure they know they're wrong, and I'm right, mm-hmm. and I didn't waste my time, you wasted yours, haha.
Yeah, or you could take the healthy approach and say, well, I have a good foundation right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to take what I learned in Lichtenauer, and I'm going to tackle Fiore.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no bad learning. Learning is a good thing. Yeah. Even if you learn something that turns out to be untrue, the fact that you put your brain, and in martial arts case, your body, through the act of learning it, makes learning the next thing a little bit easier. Like, you've built that system for learning things in your body.
It's like intelligence and wisdom are both positives. Having more of both is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, those negative behaviors that are fear-based, they're not, like, you're not doing them on purpose. You're not actively behaving this way. It's just something that we all do.
Yeah.
And it's our reaction of, like, the knee jerk. Oh, like, you hurt my feelings. I'm kind of mad right now. I want to, like, punch you and tell you you're stupid because it makes me feel a tiny bit better.
So, sorry.
It's even with the paralysis of choice and all that. Edison had a quote that there's not really failure. It's just finding 10,000 ways to do the wrong thing.
Right.
That gets you to the right thing.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So how can you consider that a failure?
Exactly. Exactly. You can't just pick it up and be perfect. You have to fail in order to succeed.
Be humble.
Now, to bring the fear straight home, as it were, we're dads and a mom sitting here on the couch, and god damn it, parenthood is terrifying.
It's scary.
There's fear every day that I'm confronting that I never thought I would confront in my life. And the strongest one has been a type of fear that I have dealt with all of my life poorly. And I'm hoping that parenthood is the thing that gives me the kick in the ass to get this fixed. I really fear a loss of control. That's a big, big one for me. When I don't have control over my environment, I get forced into this fight or flight scenario. I don't do flight very well, so I just get angry and I want to fight. And I have a really hard time. Caleb is less than a week away from starting daycare. I am terrified to lose control over my child, to pass that control over to effectively a stranger. I mean, you know, I've met his daycare provider. You know, I trust that she's a good daycare provider, but there's still that fear of, like, what if she fucks up? What if she teaches him something I don't want her to? What if she doesn't take care of him? What if he doesn't feel as loved as he does around me? And it's so hard for me to give up that constant control over his day-to-day life. And for me, that's a big foreshadowing into, like, 10 years from now, I'm going to have to start giving that control to him. I mean, even before 10 years, I'm going to have to start giving up pieces of that control to him because I don't want to raise a baby. I want to raise an adult. shit, that's scary to think about not being able to have that control. And like, I just, not only do I have to be okay with me making mistakes to eventually learn the right way, but I have to be okay with standing by and watching him make those mistakes.
It's man, really awful. You got me scared now. Oops.
No, we just collectively wet ourselves. Yeah.
No, like prior to your spiel there, I was like, oh, actually, I must be a robot because I actually don't have any fears with parenting. I think everything is going pretty swell, and you know, I have a pretty measured approach of if I can't control something, it's out of my control, and I don't worry about it. But yeah, you got some good points there.
Yeah. It is scary.
Especially with the idea of him growing up, and it's like, these things are still within my control, but I have to willingly surrender that control anyway.
Right.
I have to give it up. There's going to be a point where I'm going to have to sit here on the couch, and this sounds like the silliest little thing, but take this as a microcosm for all the big mistakes he could make later. I'm going to have to sit here and watch him fail to tie his shoes. And I can't go over there and tie them for him. That defeats the whole point. I have to let him fail. And there's going to be a point, you know, obviously I'm going to eventually tie the shoes for him, but there's going to be a point, maybe he's been at it for a couple of days, and he's going to get really, really frustrated that I tie it so fast and he can't tie them. And I'm going to have to sit there and let him suffer. I mean, I'm going to help him. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be loving. I'm going to be supportive, of course. But I have to let him figure out how to tie his shoes. And that's kind of scary in its own right, to just know that I'm going to have to let him suffer through that pain, that fear of failure, that fear of looking like an idiot, and hopefully teach him that, no, it's cool.
It builds character.
Yeah.
It builds a lot of things. Like, it builds trust that, you know, we'll hopefully do the right thing for our kids. The right thing is probably never going to be the easy thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're going to do the easy thing, because we have things to do, and ain't nobody got time to watch a kid tie his shoes.
Yep. That's the other side of parenting life, and I mean, I'll say that right out, because that's another point where I know fear comes in for a lot of parents, like fear that you're not doing the right thing all the time. You know, that you're not limiting screen time enough, your kid's watching too much TV, or you're not getting your kid outside enough, they're going to be an indoor kid, or you're taking your kid outside too much, they're going to get sunstroke or skin cancer. You can't be perfect.
Yeah.
We're not robots. Humans aren't based on algorithms. Every kid's different. Every parent's different. Every day is different. And you just got to learn to be okay with doing the best you can, I guess.
Yeah. Like, one day Caleb will love the swing. The next day he'll hate the swing. And, you know, that day maybe I'll cut the swing down from the tree and then I'll want to put it up the next day. But yeah, day to day, every day is new.
And I mean, on the flip side, one day I will love my parenting style and I'll feel so fucking righteous. I did the right thing and look at my kid and he's doing great and he's learning stuff. And the next day, I'm going to hate myself. I'm going to sit there and wallow in despair about how I'm the worst parent that ever walked the planet. And oh my God, how could I screw up my kid so bad? And somewhere in the middle is the reality that we're all desperately trying to find.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, it's hard when you have all this objective information. Like, I read a lot of articles about, you know, your child's development at this month. You should be doing blank, blank, and blank. Caleb just started waving, and he's poking one snaggle tooth on the top, and the other one's still hanging out. And I'm thinking, like, my kid is falling behind, and he's going to be slow, and he's going to be bad at school like I was, and he's going to, like, fail at everything like I did, and his life is going to suck. But you know what? My life isn't that bad. It's pretty awesome. So it's all just in your head. And
yeah.
I'm not going to tell you, like, don't feel your feelings. Feel your feelings.
Yeah.
Have them. Understand them. Know that they come from not a bad place inside of you, but they do come from somewhere.
That's what we haven't...
They're there for a reason, and you need to know how to use them.
That's what we haven't touched yet, is that we've talked about all these negative things about, oh, I'm afraid, and as a result this happens, but why do we feel afraid in the first place? If it was a bad thing that led to nothing but, you know, mental health disorders, nobody would feel fear. It would have been bred out of us eons ago because it wouldn't make any sense. Obviously, fear is a good thing to have. Sometimes being afraid is the best possible solution, because if you're not afraid, you know, if you're not afraid of falling off the balcony, you know, what's to stop you one day from maybe thinking it's a good idea to, you know, take the jump and see what happens? Like, you gotta, yeah. That fear is biologically important. We just live in a modern world where it's not always as relevant. and where we get triggers that make us feel afraid, but they're vestigial. That fear shouldn't exist anymore. And again, in martial arts, it's the real controversy. Unless you're taking something like Krav Maga that's been more or less designed to work with your instincts and work with those natural reactions, you're stuck trying to unlearn a lot of them.
Yeah. I think, like, also, there's a fear for me, another topic of fear is, I fear that I'm too old to learn things.
Yeah, and I do feel that way. Martial arts side, too.
Yeah, I do feel that way in stick fighting of, like, I feel like I'm not remembering how to do stuff. I'm always asking, inconveniencing other people, and fear that I just can't do it.
I think it's just tempering your expectations. You got to realize if you're getting into a martial art at the age of 30-something, you're not going to be world champion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though that's reserved for people who've been doing it since they're 12.
And but, in most martial arts, I mean, WMA is kind of the outlier there because a lot of us start as practitioners later in life, but in most martial arts, if you're not the champion by the time you are 30, it doesn't matter how long you've been training, you're done. Like, you don't get to keep it up.
And people see that as failure.
Yeah.
You you don't have an unblemished record. You don't have an undefeated record.
Right.
You never won a championship. Ugh, you're a never was.
Yeah.
You're still a really good martial artist.
Exactly.
You're one of the best in the field. It's like if you crack the top 10 of a ranking system or something, that you're top 10. That's an impressive achievement.
Here is my favorite quote of all time from Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise, D and E. We're not going to get too much into Star Trek. But he says, "It is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That is not weakness. It is life." And that, to me, is such a huge, profound statement, is that even if none of your fears are justified, because you don't make a single mistake, even if you're that perfect martial artist, that perfect human, you do everything right, something can still change. You could be doing absolutely everything right in a HEMA tournament, and the judge doesn't see your match-winning point. They instead see something that you don't think happened, where your opponent hit you, and you've lost the match. You did everything right. That's life. That's the way it goes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure tomorrow we're going to wake up from our sleep, and something's going to jump out in our lives and scare us, like that spider that keeps coming back into my house.
Scares us? Come on.
And it's okay.
I'm in favor of the spider. I hate all the things they eat, so.
It's okay to have those fears. It's okay to be afraid again.
Yeah.
It's not okay to let those fears tell you, I can't do my sport.
I'm 100% with Brant on this. It's tempering your expectations, and that goes for everything. I try really hard not to ever go into a martial arts class with the idea that I know anything that's about to be taught. Try really hard to go in fresh and just take it all in. And I've tried recently, anytime that I do any kind of competition, I no longer compete to win. I compete to learn from all of the other competitors. And that's great with martial arts, because you go in, you fight someone you never fought before, you're almost guaranteed to learn something, win or lose. And every SCA event I've been to, I haven't been to a big HEMA event, so I'm not sure this is the case, but every SCA event I've been to, after the tournament, people are still fighting. The list stays open, and people just have pickup fights and training sessions. So that's my commitment, is I'm not going to yield to the fear of things like competition anymore, ever, because I'm just going to go with the intention of learning things and not worry about the metal at the end. Just worry about swinging a sword and having fun. Worry about the metal and not the metal, man. Shut up. Any final statements from either of you?
Get a resounding ugh from Krista.
Ugh.
Got class tomorrow, so looking forward to a great day of training. And next week, we do have the cutting event, and we're going to have the list open for some matches, for some sparring. And like you said, just you got to keep an open mind about it. You can't fear the act of competition. You have to embrace it. And looking forward to it.
It's going to be a fun day.
All right, well, that's it for this week's podcast. Again, if you have anything to weigh in on this, you know, topic of fear, some of the topics we talked about in the SCA and HEMA, feel free to weigh in. We'd love to have some discussion with some of our listeners and, maybe come to some new realizations ourselves. So, other than that, thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.